The podcast of which you are about to listen to is an account of the true tragedy that befell three podcasters, in particular Garrett, Matt, and Mick. Had they lived very, very long lives, they would not have expected, nor would they have wished to see, their retrospective started in 2018 result in the mad and macabre as they were about to experience that day. For them, an idyllic spring movie became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 2022.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2022, released February 18th, 2022. No budget, no box office, because this thing was so bad they didn't even get any fucking screenings in for it. And it was directed by David Blue Garcia. Who? All right, I am joined once again by my famed chainsaw colleagues. First, the always grumpy when we get into this series, Matthew Goudreau. What's up, Matt?
Oh, you know me so well, buddy. You know me so fucking well.
A little different topic than Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't think we'd see these on the same shelf if this was a video store. And we are joined by, I would say, Matt, would you say Mick is the Texas Chainsaw apologist of this podcast?
Apologist might be the wrong word, but I would definitely say he's our, he's like our guide.
Well, there you go. The one and only Mick Duffy. Mick, how you doing, kind sir?
The only movie I've seen in the last 2 weeks is this film twice. So that's how my schedule has been. So a lot of deep appreciation of this text coming. So yeah. Gird yourselves, you know.
All right. Well, for those who are not in the know and haven't listened to our previous entries in this series, and you kind of just saw that there was a review of the new shiny Texas Chainsaw, you're like, oh, what's up with this podcast? We are now called Three Men in a Retrospective Podcast. We have been coming over here from Binge Media. We started this series, what was it, guys, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
2018, so it's been about 3.5 years.
Three and a half years.
Last finished.
3.5 years ago, we started this series at the request of Mr. Duffy over here. He wanted to cover it. And, you know, let's recap this entire franchise from where we started for those who haven't listened to those shows. The first movie, all three of us agreed, just fantastic, gritty, grimy. If you want to get just uneased and watch unrelenting, very independent but very well-made horror film, then Texas Chainsaw Massacre is your speed. And we all gave that pretty high marks. Almost immediately, this series just kind of turned into something different. Because, Matt, the two of us, did you like Texas Chainsaw 2, Matt? I don't remember. I think you did.
I borderline love it.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I was the one who was the outlier of that.
I adore Chainsaw 2. I think it's a really misunderstood film.
Agreed.
Wow.
You know, I think it's way ahead of the curve. I think it was doing sort of outrageous, splattery horror comedy, you know, a year before Evil Dead 2 hits and before we got those early Peter Jackson films. And, you know, I think it's a film that's much misunderstood. And I wouldn't say it's one of the canonically great films, I could say, of the original, but I think it's very, very, very good and deeply underrated and has much to commend it. And after that, as Cook says in Saw 2, after the glory, the shame. You know,
we get to Texas Chainsaw 3, which, my God, it was so tough to get through that movie, and the three of us just really went into that. Texas Chainsaw 4, the next generation, whatever you want to call it, another just canonically bad movie with an actor who would go on to do great things, as is a lot of these horror franchises, Matthew McConaughey. But all three of us agree that even that performance.
And Renee Zellweger.
Yeah, and Renee Zellweger, too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and the third one had Viggo Mortensen. So this franchise has a track record of actors who would go on to do great things, but it's almost like they had to make a deal with the devil. Do these movies, and you'll be rewarded later on.
We then get into the Michael Bay pictures, which, you know, I wasn't a fan of. I believe Matt was a pretty big fan of the 2003 remake.
Yes, I am. I'm still a staunch defender of it. I think it's fantastic. But don't twist my words. That only extends to the remake.
Yeah, Mick and I weren't really big on that one.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
Okay, then we get into Texas Chainsaw the Beginning, and man, you talk about just a steep fall. Three of us weren't really into that one. And then there's a Texas Chainsaw 3D, which comes out in 2012, which the three of us, again, weren't really big fans of at all. If I do remember anything about that series, it's how entertaining it was once we start talking about the, and I'll just put Ferris wheel.
Oh, yeah.
just a crazy off the wall, not really entertaining film. And then we get into Leatherface, which I actually kind of liked, and the other two people on this podcast borderline hated. And that's where we left it. And honestly, I didn't think we would ever return to this franchise. I thought we were done. I thought we were like, okay, we could put this aside. Matt and I, we could finally get into our Marvel. We can get into everything we want to do now that we started our own thing. And here we are. We're talking, yeah, once again, Texas Chainsaw. Mick, well, as the fan of this series, how the hell did we get here?
Well, it's because being a completist is a disorder, you know?
Tell that to my co-host.
Yeah, I mean, we need to address this right now. Being a staunch completist of anything that just keeps consistently getting worse is, you know, it's an illness, and we need to move past it. Yeah, that's
welcome
how we
to my
ended
world,
up.
Sir. This has been my world since I was 12 years old. So,
yeah,
and I've taken it to a whole new level with this podcast. So you're like me. You're a completist as well. You said in a thread that Kim Henkel has actually still been active doing stuff. What has he done?
Okay, well, Kim Henkel Kim Henkel produced and wrote a horror film, this is like about 10 years ago now, called Butcher Boys. I think the original title was Bone Boys, but they belatedly changed that because it sounds too much like porn. And that movie is very transparently a chainsaw sequel that's had the serial numbers filed off and just been shot, but it is clearly, it's kind of an attempt to try and do a chainsaw movie, but in an urban setting.
Okay.
And with some very clunky satire in it, and it's it may be the worst thing I've ever seen. You know, worst thing I've ever seen made by people who should theoretically know how to make a motion picture.
We need to add that the two of us, I think out of everybody on this podcast, including my colleague, me and Matt have reviewed obviously some pretty terrible films, including a few of the ones that we just mentioned. But you and I also did the George A. Romero Living Dead films, and there are some at the end of that series where I don't know how we got through them, honestly.
Yeah.
And those are terrible, terrible movies. You're saying what Kim Henkel did, and it's sad because these are people who made movies that are genre-changing films and mind-boggling films that we adored as youngsters and we adore as adults. But they go on to make these films that you're just like, what? So you're saying Kim Henkel made something as bad as, say, Survival of the Dead?
Oh, much worse.
Wow.
Because you can say what you like about Survival of the Dead, but it has a few bits in it that work, and it's got that great final shot that's very fun and very EC Comics, yes. Butcher Boys has really nothing to commend it, unless you like bad digital gore and random cameos from people who were in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Oh, and the heartbreaking thing about it is, it's Henkel wrote and produced it, and the directors, I want to say Dwayne Meeks and somebody Graves, two directors, they and Henkel had previously made this short I really, really liked. They'd made this horror short called Head Cheese.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of more of a tone poem than a narrative thing, but it's really evocative and really unsettling, and I'm a huge fan of that. So I had, you know, I thought, okay, this might be good, and it's not good. So, yeah, it's Kim Henkel is kind of, I suppose, right now in the same position as the and John Russo, George Romero's co-writer of Night of the Living Dead, where he kind of spun off into making his own inferior zombie movies. It's sort of like that, but I suppose on this occasion his company Exurbia Films, which is the title of an unmade script of his that he was talking about in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, they partnered up with, Legendary Pictures, who are huge, and Fede Alvarez's company, Bad Hombre. So it's weird. I don't know how much input he had over this new film, but yeah. So if we include his Butcher Boys as sort of unofficial Chainsaw movie, that's the absolute nadir, right?
Yeah.
But
before we get to this, I and Mick, you give me what you know about the making of this film. I'm going to give one reason why this movie exists. And I think we can boil it down. And Matt, I think you're going to agree with me. Halloween 2018, right?
Yeah.
That is the template for what we got and what we're about ready to review.
Yes.
To a certain extent, you're correct. I think it's when we'll talk about certain components of this, I think the factoring of that movie is undeniable. But it's sort of indicative of a larger trend that we've had over the past close to a decade is these legacy sequels. The idea of taking established properties that were popular at a time and sort of continuing it, but also trying to connect it to a whole new generation. I think probably Disney Star Wars started this trend, and looking at the horror landscape, Halloween was probably the first one that did it to some degree of success. And we've had, you know, Garrett, we just had a Scream movie come out as well that kind of does something similar, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point.
Yeah.
Speaking of completionist franchises, hell, we just had it with Chucky. We had a TV show, which I loved.
Yes.
It shocked me, too. I couldn't believe how much I liked it.
The Chucky TV show has, I think, maybe some of the smartest writing.
Yeah, it does.
Of anything I've seen in the last year. And I wish some of that intelligence and subversion had been applied to this film.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'm so glad, let me say it for the record, I'm so glad Dream Warriors exists and we don't have to do a movie where it's Nancy fighting Freddy 40 years later, because that's technically already been done twice, so that franchise, hopefully we don't have to revisit, and same thing with Friday the 13th. Part of that is because there's really characters. No one would give a shit if somebody came back from the Friday movies outside of, I don't know, Tommy Jarvis. But yeah, this is definitely wears Halloween on its sleeve to a borderline derivative as being kind of what they pull at this movie.
It's kind of skinned off Halloween 2018's face.
Yeah.
And somehow it fixed it to its own, but with no visible means of support for tying it there.
And we are closing the podcast with that. That is perfect. Yeah. The perfect review of it.
And it looks like instead of being all form-fitted, it looks like Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black, where his skin isn't
not
fully connected and it's falling off. That's one of many comparisons that I have to describe the 74-minute viewing experience that I had with this movie last night, which... It's amazing that we're reviewing this since it technically doesn't qualify for feature length because the minimum is 75 minutes, I believe, for Oscar consideration.
Yes. Well, you know, they...
Completionism.
Weird that they ruled themselves out of that, huh?
Yeah, I know. They were aiming the chainsaw perpetually low.
Yeah. No, well, see, the thing is, I knew this film was coming because, weirdly, the announcement of it got a lot of press coverage where I am here in Northern Ireland. This was actually this was the news story here because originally it was supposed to be directed by two directors from here, Ryan and Andy Toholl, who are brothers. In fact, they're identical twins. And yes, it was announced with great fanfare. And then a week into production, they were fired.
Wow. Now, had Fede Alvarez, had he already been on this thing before that happened? Was he already on as producer, or did he come on later as well?
No, he was the producer from the start of this. So this was announced.
Okay.
There was an announcement in Variety where I was like, oh my, because, I mean, again, the filmmaking community here in Northern Ireland isn't that large, right? So I knew the Toholl brothers. I mean, these are people I've had coffee with before, yes.
No shit.
Yeah. I mean, we don't go fishing or anything. Like, if I met them in the street, I'd have to have a chat with them because they're people I know. Yes, they are. Everyone here who makes films or is involved in crewing knows everyone else, yes? So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting choice for this movie. And the cinematographer whom I have worked with on a wee project, a guy called Angus Mitchell, who also was given the push after a week. And I don't know anything about the actual behind-the-scenes drama there. And honestly, I would never ask any of these people about that. That would just be rude, and I wouldn't want anyone to sort of, you know, relive what might have been a humiliating and embarrassing experience just so I could have the gossip. I wouldn't do that. But again, this film getting announced here in the local media, the coverage of it, you'd think You'd have thought they'd landed the next Star Wars or something. There was some wildly disproportionate coverage, and everyone was very excited. And they got fired.
Get fired.
I will say this, though. Getting fired from a movie one week in is a very Tobey Hooper kind of move. Because that happened to him at least twice.
Did it really?
Yeah. There's that horror film, The Dark. And there's an absolutely bonkers insane British horror thriller called Venom that you have to see. Yeah, Hooper apparently had a nervous breakdown a week into it.
No kidding. Now, this isn't the Kevin Williamson scripted film from early 2000s. This is something...
No. This is a...
Okay.
Getting off topic. It's a 1982 British... Wow. Home invasion horror thriller in which criminals are holding a diplomat's son hostage in his house, his townhouse in London, but they don't realize that a black mamba, the most dangerous snake on earth, is loose in the property. The film's shot with an actual black mamba, which is super
Jesus.
It's shot with the most dangerous animal you can have, yes.
I love the 80s.
And the cast was, when you hear the cast and you're like, I'm going to say the cast to you, and you're like, I can understand why Tobey Hooper crumbled. The cast is a Oliver Reed.
Oh, fuck.
Klaus Kinski.
I was going to say that as a joke. I had no idea he was actually...
Yeah. Sterling Hayden.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So all actors who are famously volatile and had drink problems. And also, do you know Nicole Williamson? Nicole Williamson?
No.
Famously insane English actor. You may remember him as Merlin in John Berman's Excalibur.
Okay,
all right. This is the man who literally started a fist fight with another actor during the live production of a play on stage.
Oh, Jesus.
I know him from two things, sadly. One is Return to Oz.
Oh, yes.
He's the Gnome King, and his last movie, I think, was Spawn.
Yes, I think it was.
And he's also in Exorcist 3, I think, for a little bit.
He is. But, that film is, the finished film is massively entertaining, and I heartily recommend it.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
And some people would say that he was fired from Poltergeist, but that's a discussion for a whole other day.
That's a discussion for another day. But,
yeah, exactly.
Because so much of the early press was talking about how we're going to try and make this as much like the original film, and just what happens when you channel Tobey Hooper too much.
Well, it should be said that we've mentioned his name a couple times, but Fede Alvarez made one of the most well-received remakes of our time, the Evil Dead remake from 2013. It got a lot of good notice for this guy, and I haven't seen him. He did that one with...
Don't Breathe.
Yeah, Don't Breathe. That's the only other thing I really know that he's done since.
He also did a sequel to Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but he did a story with that character.
Oh, yes. That was his?
Yes.
Oh,
terrible, terrible movie, by the way.
It's an awful film. I didn't know that was his.
Yeah, it's not good.
So this movie was getting a lot of press in your way of the woods there, Mick.
Yeah.
And when these guys were fired, did they come out in the press or anything out there? Or
were they
completely silent? Okay, they were completely silent.
I'm completely silent, and, you know, I can't blame them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing you can say there that's not going to make you look worse.
Absolutely.
And the thing when it was reported in the trades was that Legendary Pictures had said that they, quote, weren't sparking to the rushes they were seeing.
Jeez. So how'd they respond to these rushes? Okay, all right. I guess let's just get right into this film. We've already gone longer than I was expecting.
I want to talk about Legendary for a second, because they have a very, very extensive track record of movies. A lot of them not necessarily – they're not like a Warner Brothers or a Paramount where they take control of one franchise, because – you know, this has gone through as many hands as Leatherface has gone through chainsaws. But over the last year, they produced Dune, Godzilla vs. Kong, and Garrett, speaking of movies we've reviewed, they've produced a lot of Nolan's films, and M. Night Shyamalan's Lady in the Water.
Oh, jeez. All right, so anything else we got to add to this? I had no idea about Nick's backstory to this. That is so fucking fascinating. Any other thing we need to add to this before we get into it, or should we just get right into the plot?
Well, just dive right into the plot here.
All right. This should take about 10 minutes to get into the plot of this film. We start off by getting a recap of the first film being told to us by John Larroquette, who they just keep digging up for these things. Speaking of people we thought
I think much like Leatherface, they keep him in the basement and uncuff him to bring him into the voice the recording studio.
Now, we had this approach before, right? Texas Chainsaw 3D tried this approach where we're getting recap of the first film and we're ignoring the other films. Isn't this old hat at this point? Can we stop ignoring sequels and just, especially when it's already been attempted?
It's a trend that all these big franchises have done. It's entirely cyclical at this point, but also the Platinum Dudes remake does this as well. He does the voiceover for that, and that really takes advantage of the documentarian framing device. But it's just, it drives me nuts how all these franchises eventually make a movie where they ignore the sequels, essentially reboot, but the same crippling mistakes that the movies they're trying to erase from history did. It's fascinating, but it's also annoying as shit to watch this continuously happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say the opening of this is maybe the movie's only bit of genuine wit or invention, because they start this as if, oh, this is like an narration recap, yes?
Uh-huh.
And then they pull back to show that it's on a TV, that it's not a narration at the start of a movie, that it's a true crime documentary playing on a TV.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they do the gag as well as they should do, because they've got that play icon right at the start of it, which gives the game away.
Yeah, good point.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, it's a solid enough joke. I thought, oh, this might be better than I thought.
Yeah, the way this starts off, it's almost like, my girlfriend loves those true crime shows. Like, every time I come into the room, she's watching one of those. And it feels like something she would be watching. You know what I'm saying? Stay tuned as we recap what happened that fateful night. But it's also here for a purpose, because we're going to be introducing a character that was from that first film. So it serves two different purposes.
Yeah.
So if this wasn't in our head enough, we get a scene in a gas station where the people we are following in this film get another lecture on Sally's attempts to hunt down Leatherface. And,
yeah, exposition Bob.
Yeah,
the friendly gas station attendant.
yeah, we haven't seen this before. Now this is supposed to throw us off, right? We're supposed to think that this guy's a part of the family.
Well, I don't think they're that clever. My question is, he's selling all of this Texas Chainsaw merchandise, yes?
Uh-huh.
And like I lived in the East End of London for a while, so I'm very familiar with Jack the Ripper merchandise being sold, and that being a, you know, real-life series of unsolved homicides that have been monetized by shysters. But I'm wondering, would this happen with something that was still within living memory like that?
If we're talking like 40, 50 years down the road, probably.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely sure whether or not that made sense, but then, you know, things not making sense is going to be a recurring motif here, I think.
It has been for 6 films.
Yeah.
And one thing interesting, Elsie Fisher, one of these girls. Now, Elsie Fisher was an actress, for people who don't know. She was in one of my favorite films from a few years ago called Eighth Grade.
Oh, she's amazing in that.
She's fantastic in that movie. That is a really, really good movie. Not an uplifting film, like a very downtrodden movie, but goddamn is she great in it.
I mean,
I did not recognize her here. It wasn't until I started doing the plot summaries and things, I was like, oh shit,
well,
that is her.
It's because they dyed her badly to make her look more like the other actress,
uh-huh,
to pass them off as sisters, and it's distractingly bad, the dye job.
Yeah,
it just looks weird. It's like when goth kids in my school would try and dye their hair themselves. It looks like that. It's, you know, that I'm going to look like I've got black hair, and like, no. Boot polish, you know.
Yeah.
It looks like really bad or really cheap spray-on Halloween hair dye that comes off within 12 hours. It's so bad that it looks like her head is floating in certain shots where the camera's shooting in the dark. It's like her hair is not attached to anything. I thought it was going to be sentient and come to life, and this movie would have turned into something like Hell Toupee, which is a better joke than anything in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
How long were you really sitting on that joke for this long?
I have notes for this movie because I had to find ways to keep myself entertained. But the merchandise is one of the things that drove me nuts, because between the merchandise and the documentary show, how is it that the people who are coming to view this town know absolutely nothing about what was committed? I love how this gas station attendant's like, oh yeah, the guy was never caught because he wore a mask. I'm like, you have DNA samples, you have a witness that survived. You mean to tell me nobody found this fucking guy 50 years from now? I was already getting annoyed with this movie on every facet.
It's the idea that Leatherface would be able to vanish like D.B. Cooper. You know, it's like Leatherface could just walk into a crowd and be gone. You know,
a 7-foot Zodiac killer.
Yeah, I guess we need to mention that Mel does buy, immediately clocked at this kind of a, she buys a chainsaw-shaped corkscrew, yes?
Yeah, I got that.
And I'm like, well, A, it's like, well, that's an obvious Chekhov's gun, right? And B, why is it a corkscrew? Is this for all of the wine drinking that people passing by must be doing? A corkscrew? You know the way it was a bottle opener? I'd go like, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, you know damn good and well there's not a fucking vineyard for miles in Texas. Yeah. Which, by the way, as someone, probably one of the only person on the show who's been to Texas, this was clearly not shot in Texas.
No, this was
shot in, like, Eastern Europe.
Well, this is shot in Bulgaria, where you would need a corkscrew because it's a famously brilliant wine-growing region, you know.
And they're like, they're Leatherface committed these murders in the middle of, with the geography. I'm like, so basically you're saying he killed people in the suburbs with the geographic components that you're talking about.
Yeah, because they said it was a few miles outside of Austin. Is what
I'm like, that's the suburbs.
Yeah, that's, well, it would definitely be the suburbs now.
They're headed to the town of Harlow to auction it off and build their own little utopia.
Yeah.
I was getting Shyamalan's The Village.
I absolutely was getting The Village vibes from this. Are we supposed to not like these kids doing this, therefore making Leatherface the hero of this story? Well, are we going to go down this fucking road again?
Well, the gas station guy calls them gentrifuckers.
Yes.
And if there's one thing we know about gentrification, it's definitely being driven by young people in their 20s buying all of the property, because that's the thing young people in their 20s can do.
Yes, because that's what we have with student loan debt and all the other issues that our generation has suffered from, is we're going to gentrify this scenic nowhere town. They're not targeting old people to come in and buy this property to make money. They're targeting yuppies. They're targeting hipsters. And Garrett, you're right. The movie goes out of its way to make every single, Ellie Fisher notwithstanding, the other three, just the most deplorable people possible, especially not to get specific, the black guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes. I hate him so much.
Which they also did in Texas Chainsaw 3D as well. I mean, not to keep going back to that, but that was another deplorable character.
Yeah, no, it's kind of weird. I mean, we're going to get into this as well, but it's not only as gentrification is driven by young people who are super affluent because the young people have all the money, yes. It's all presented as being Dante's idea, because this is what gentrification is, isn't it? It's the young black people buying up all of the property and driving white folk out. It's a strange, bizarre world understanding of how gentrification works.
Uh-huh.
And it gets worse, but, you know.
We're only 10 minutes in, boys.
that's like 20% of the runtime of this thing.
They get stopped by cops who are hesitant but let the kids through. And then they get accused of being a cult by the guy from the gas station as they head into the house. We then meet the old lady of the house, played by Alice Creech, who says that she has a title to keep her land. Creech is someone who I know from one movie and one movie only, and that we will be covering it in a few years. It's called Sleepwalkers.
Here's the weird thing, because when this was announced, and when the news of the casting started filtering out, and originally IMDb said that Alice Creech was playing Sally Hardesty, which would have been really great casting, because Alice Creech kind of is sort of a petite woman in the right age range, yes? She's very good at doing haunted and weird. And I kind of thought, oh, yes, I can see that being a good fit, you know? Marlon Burns having passed on, but Alice Creech would be a good substitute. So, yeah, super weird when I found out she wasn't playing Sally.
Yeah, Marlon Burns passed in 2014, so they obviously weren't going to get hers. I want to go back. Mick, when you heard about the making of this and you heard Alice Creech and stuff started leaking out, you being the fan of the series, I got to ask, were you excited or were you thinking, oh, God, they're going to Leatherface this up, aren't they?
Well, no. By the time the casting was announced, they'd already been through the original directors and DP. By this point, this already had the stench of something that was going to be bad, right? Uh-huh. So my expectations were super low by this point. This is a property that no one's really managed to sequelize well. You know, I love Hooper's sequel, but it's a very different kind of film. You know, I think even Toby Hooper admitted that, well, I can't make another movie like that. And all attempts to try and fit this into kind of a slasher movie mold have sort of failed, really. So my expectations were low. But Alice Creech being part of the cast was one of those things where I thought, oh, okay. And also Elsie Fisher, because Eighth Grade is one of the best films of the last 10 years and she's amazing in it. So those were really the only two things that gave me any cause for optimism.
So the sheriffs come back to kick Jenny out. There's an argument about whether or not to go through the deal and live there in Harlow. Meanwhile, Jenny is choking in the van as the guy in the van goes crazy and starts murdering everyone in it. One in an odd way of bending someone's wrist into bone and then stabbing another guy with it.
Yes. Well, it's itchy and scratchy, isn't it? Is this how human anatomy works?
I had to rewind this because I didn't think I saw what I thought what I saw. Like, how is this? I don't know. We get into logic and this, our fucking heads will spin. But it's I gotta say, I've never seen it. You know, they did get me there.
Yeah, this woke me up out of my slumber because I was dozing off at this point. They left the house, and again, the Dante character is just being so much of an asshole to her, and she's doing everything she can to be nice. Like, she offers them into the house, you know, because she has the deed. She could very easily say, I will shoot you if you don't get off my property. And he's, like, calling her an old woman, and he's threatening her. Like, just the movie is so...
Well, it's
the most mean-spirited movie they've done, and Leatherface is certainly up there, but, like, it's unapologetically cruel to everybody.
They do make the kids seem like assholes for wanting Jenny to remove the Confederate flag hanging from the house.
Mm-hmm.
And she does get that thing about, it was my great-granddaddy's flag. You know, like, we should let Southerners fly the Confederate flag for sentimental reasons and ignore its actual meaning.
No shit.
You know, they're kind of...
Talk about right-wing politics. There's a lot to get into with this fucking movie.
Yeah, and it's kind of like this and... oh, man. Yeah, it's... I think if this movie was a person, I'd get into arguments with it where it tried to tell me that the Civil War was about states' rights.
She calls them an outdated term. But it's not like they made her a Confederate sympathizer or she says, hey, I'm not. Don't let him in the house. You know, he has to wait outside. You know, if they made her that level of just white trash, there would be a certain amount of justification for him to be as aggressive as he is. But I didn't get the necessity of that. And the thing in the car with the van when he rips the guy's arms off. This movie, Leatherface was a character in Mortal Kombat X. And there is several points in this movie where he feels like a fighting game character. He does fatalities in this movie. They gave him like...
Yeah.
And let's talk about Leatherface. I hate that we see his face so visibly.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And it's the most unimaginative depiction maybe ever. They just made him Jason Voorhees. Retraction. Yeah. They made him Michael Myers from Halloween Kills, where he's unkillable, he cannot be hurt, and he has two teleportation charges that he can use in 70 minutes.
Well... Did we spot the shot when, you know, when Dante goes up the stairs in the house to try and take the flag off the flagpole? And Leatherface is just sitting in the corner? And it's like, okay, we're supposed to think these kids are assholes because they're going to gentrify this town and they're made to seem rude by telling her to take down the flag and everything, but she's harboring a mass murderer. You know, I think
it's never explained how they met. It's never explained what their connection is. How did he get to this orphanage?
And
why is there an orphanage in a town with three people?
And the timeline doesn't make sense. You know, she has that line about, oh, we take in boys and sometimes troubled teens. And I think the troubled teens line is meant to refer to Leatherface, yes. There's a line in the little documentary clip at the start saying the killer could have been anywhere between the ages of 16 and 22, right? Like, they're trying to convince us, like Leatherface was just in his teens, so he's now only pushing 70 rather than literally 70. But it's like, what age was she then?
Yeah.
Because just as a woman, like, in her early to mid-70s, yes, like, that's the absolute oldest she can be. You know, the actual actress has just turned 70, right? I mean, it's, was she like a teenage girl running an orphanage? You know,
maybe it's just...
You guys are applying logic to a movie that doesn't apply logic.
Yeah, but I mean, it's asking me to...
You're right.
It's also begging you to take real-world issues into perspective in a movie that is so far removed from reality.
Yes.
Now, Matt, you go to how the other face is depicted in this. But with the exception of that last film, isn't that how we've seen him for the last, I don't know, since number three? Is the superhuman Michael Myers part three, or yeah. I'm sorry, Michael Myers part four character who's kind of invulnerable?
Yeah, but I think the only one that got around that successfully was the remake because they made him so big. So there's your justification. But this guy just looks like a guy I would see at a bar that I would leave alone. And it's not the fact that he's the age that he's supposed to be because, look, Liam Neeson's made an entire career of kicking people's asses well into his 60s. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. But I never like unstoppable killing machines, unless they're Jason in the good movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
of which there are only a couple.
Or if they're if they're an entity like Freddy, right?
Yeah, well, Freddy, when there's no supernatural component, and you try to you still make him on like Halloween Kills. That's one of the many things that made me hate that movie as much as I did is that they just made him unkillable. Which again, it's the cyclical thing of doing the thing that the previous installments got derided for, and Leatherface has never been the. He's never been an A-list slasher. Like he is the title of this franchise bears more cachet to casual fans than any character.
Mm-hmm. So Lila makes friends with a mechanic, and she says, and I cannot believe they go here with this character. They said that she was a survivor of a school shooting.
Oh my God! I had to pause the movie.
It's her first line to him.
Yes!
Her first line to him. Richter, why are you such a nihilist? I mean, I'm like, a human being typed that line of dialogue and left it in a screenplay. And then it reached the production stage and, you know, principal photography and performers said that line, you know, performers said that line without complaint. This is, it's just such an astonishingly... you know, it's a she's bluntly stating the thing he is in a way that's not believable.
You know? You're absolutely right. This is an actress who this might be what her third film, maybe second or third film.
And I mean, a less skilled actress wouldn't be able to even say it at all. I think testament to Elsie Fisher being so good that she kind of just about gets away with this unspeakably bad dialogue.
Well, yeah, she's not Phoebe Cates here. She's not stinking the place up with this dialogue. But I have to keep going to that. But the thing about it is, like, she is a well-respected actress. And you're absolutely right, Mick. Why wouldn't she question, why would I say this? Like,
I have a better question. If you're the production company, how the fuck can you justifiably greenlight this plot point?
Yeah.
That is the... Look, it's no state secret that I hate this movie, in case you could tell already. But just the chutzpah of these filmmakers to a subject that is still rampantly apparent in our community, and to make that your main character's overarching both backstory. Yes. And empowering moment is her picking up a gun.
Yes.
I think that is one of the most damning, thoughtless points I have ever seen in a horror movie. That would be like making this like a Me Too type movie where the only way she – like what Zack Snyder Sucker Punch did with the only way for her to be in her fantasy is because she's being raped repeatedly.
Oh my god!
It's not just the fact that they show it or that they talk about it. It's that they literally cut to a bunch of dead school kids.
Yes.
Even though it's only a split second, I'm like, you are. It's the ultimate example of trying to make prestige out of horror just by taking real life plot points to make yourself seem more sophisticated. Like, fuck everybody involved in this.
I think the thing is they're trying to be almost a sort of A24 elevated horror film, but they're handling all of these elements so badly that they're just coming up with these terrible, really reactionary takes on them.
Yeah.
You know, I can't take credit for it, but someone who was talking about this said, you know, it's so right wing. I'm amazed it went to Netflix and didn't just go straight to Daily Wire. You know, they've got that school shooting movie, right?
Yeah.
Which I've not watched, but this sounds like it has the same ethos, you know. Yeah.
And Matt, wasn't one of your top movies based on somebody who survived a school shooting or something?
Yeah, Matt. Well, it's Mass, which is about parents dealing with a school shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. So
like this is just half-assed anti, like It's really weird how this movie is supposed to have apparently some kind of anti-gun until the third act where it doesn't. It's a half-assed message. It doesn't work in a dumb slasher movie where you are supposed to be cheering on the killer. Like, to quote Jay Ballman from Red Letter Media, unless you're Funny Games, you really can't do that.
Yeah.
No.
So Melody is prepared to leave after reading the text that Ruth sent. Ruth, the gal in the ambulance. I know I haven't gone into much of these characters, but they don't ask you to, so I don't. Well, the only reason I got this chick's name was because I checked Wikipedia. Go ahead.
Well, you know, if you watch this with the subtitles on Netflix, Netflix doesn't seem to know Ruth's name. A couple of times when she speaks, and it's, you know, when she's on the CB, and it's her voice over, you know, wide shots. She's not in shot, and they caption it as Dante's partner.
Jeez.
So the people subtitling this couldn't be bothered to learn her name. So, and I vaguely remember, again, this. Here's the thing as well, because this film was shot in Bulgaria, and most of the cast aren't American.
Yeah.
You actually find Ruth is English. She's in that show Outlander. She's a minor character in Outlander.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, the mechanic guy, the contractor guy, Richter, that's an Irish actor, who I guess is a hangover from the Toehill brothers, because he'd been in some of their stuff. But, I mean, it's like, there's very few actual Americans in this movie.
You know, honestly, Mick, you're doing a revelation for me right now, because honestly, besides Elsie Fisher and Ellis Creech, I didn't think there was anybody in this movie who actually worked before. I had no idea that all these people
South
had...
African.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and even the sheriff, William Hope, who you might remember was Gorman in Aliens.
Wow.
Yeah, he's Canadian. I mean, I think there's the actress playing older Sally is Irish as well. I think there are more Irish people in this than actual Texans, which is a weird thing.
We see the other guy in the car prove himself to be Leatherface as he kills Ruth by cutting across her stomach and then putting Ginny's face on his.
This was hysterical to me because she's relatively smart, but she thinks Leatherface is gone. What is the first thing she does? She comically pokes her head out of the passenger seat of the car and just sits there for 20 seconds. And I thought for sure he was going to be on top of the car and immediately decapitate her. This movie couldn't even set up the death scenes particularly well.
Here's the thing. So Leatherface has skinned Ginny, yes? He's skinned his surrogate mom, but not like the sheriff or the deputy who are both dead at this point, yes? William Hope's got a very baggy-looking face, so that would be a comfortable fit. Yeah? He's skinned, I mean, again, just Ellis Creech, who seems to have a very small face, yes, that somehow fits over his gigantic, meaty, you know, Easter Island statue-sized face.
You know, I caught that too. Like, when he picks the face up, and we see it from a far shot where, I mean, I have no idea what this director, Blue, has done. I haven't seen any of his previous work. He's also a cinematographer, apparently. But he has this, like, weird thing of doing everything in long shot. So there's this long shot of Leatherface putting this face on. And I thought the exact same thing, Mick. I said, that can't be her face. Like, it's way too big.
Yeah. And it doesn't explain how he's getting to sit on. Like, you know, like when you put on a Halloween mask, not one of those ones that's like a full, you know, latex hood kind of one, but you know the one where, like, yeah, there's a mask and there's a little elastic strapped string at the back?
Yeah.
How's he keeping this in place? Is it just so sticky? It's just...
Mick, again, you're applying logic to something that was written in about 10 minutes.
I'd just like to know how it's staying in place.
Speaking of staying in place, we cut to a barbecue. because that's a joke that this franchise can't stop doing.
We cut to a barbecue, and did you catch what they use as a sound bridge when they cut to the barbecue?
What's that?
So you see the Polaroid flash bulb sound from the original film, you know, the...
Yeah, I did catch
it. It's there for no reason.
No reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the mechanic starts acting upset that they killed Ginny. And while trying to prove that they own the property, Dante discovers he doesn't have the papers with him. We cut to Hardesty on the phone. Now, are we supposed to think that she's going to go all to Daryl on us and be by his side?
It's on a CB.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. CB. Yeah, you're
right.
It's
the most 70s way of communicating.
You're right.
She's gutting a pig.
Yes, that was my point.
Because the one thing that's clear from the end of the original film is that after this, Sally's going to be a really big fan of meat. And meat hooks and meat preparation, all of that stuff, barbecues, that's just going to be totally her jam, you know? That's a thing she'll really be into. I mean, it's like, you would be, wouldn't you, yes?
Yeah.
If you'd seen your friends all killed by a family of deranged cannibals, you would be super into meat thereafter. Makes sense. This is how trauma works.
Now, did this woman... They cast her, obviously, because Marilyn Burns wasn't available, obviously. Why go this route? With the exception of Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween 2018, why would they do this?
That's the sole reason. I don't think there's any other justification, because she's dressed exactly the same. That's the same wig. She's wearing
it's
a
the same
tank top.
Wig. Yeah. Yeah, same tank top.
The difference is that Laurie Strode was a character in the original Halloween. Uh-huh. Sally's really not. She's just the vessel, which works perfectly well for that movie. I'm not saying that's a flaw, but you can't have that same PTSD sort of depiction. No. But I do think that was handled pretty well as far as what Laurie Strode became. Less said about the sequel, the better. But here it is strictly off of what else can we dig up that this franchise has never done? Because this is the first time they've brought somebody back for like subsequent movies.
Yeah.
In like the main continuity, quote unquote, Arlie Ermey's, I think, the exception for the Platinum Dunes one. But that's a prequel, so it's kind of different.
Well, if you count Dead Franklin in Chainsaw 2.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Dead Franklin, you know.
Meanwhile, Melody sees papers that prove Jenny was wrongfully evicted, and Dante proves everyone watching this wrong by being the second one killed in this. Third, if you count Jenny.
You're talking about our core group of kids and the order they die in. So Dante's girlfriend is the first of the kids to get killed, yes? So the first woman in your movie to get killed is a white woman who's in an interracial relationship, and your next one's a black kid, and I'm not sure the makers of this film thought about the implications of any of the stuff they were doing.
Oh, clearly not.
You know, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt here, but God.
When you have a script where one of your main characters' things of sympathy is she was a survivor of a school shooting, I don't think there's any thinking going on in this screenplay.
Was it a case that they just wrote these characters without races in mind and they just cast? That they weren't considering that?
But or do you think they just picked someone up, like they picked up the cheapest person available? Is that what you're saying? Like maybe.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, I guess we're supposed to think, I suppose logically, that the transgression is that these people are going into this town where they don't belong, yes? And that their second transgression is that they're kicking Ginny out of her house, yes? But it might be possible also to read this, if you're a crazy racist, that the transgression was them being in an interracial relationship because they're the first two of the kids to get killed. I can see a white supremacist having a great time with this movie.
So, when I was watching, quote-unquote, this movie, I was thinking about how hard am I going to come down on this ultimately, because since there's no disrespect to Elsie Fisher and Alice Krieg, there's no one the movie's sold on or anyone that's really a star vehicle like getting, I don't know, use Halloween Kills as an example. That has, like, very prominent actors in it, so I'm more condemning of it as far as quality goes that you had pieces in place here. I don't think I could be as tough on the actors because they're placeholders. But I couldn't believe that he did not bleed out, given where he is cut. There was an artery right there, and especially if you get hit anywhere near your throat, because his whole face is completely lacerated, he would have bled out in about 30 seconds. There's no fucking way he would have been able to walk all the way to that bus.
Oh,
I know I'm trying to apply logic in a horror movie, but there's just... In a movie that, let's say this, for all the blood that's in this movie, so much of it looks fake as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's all CGI for the most part. The movie is so, it's not shot in the best light. And I mean that literally, because inside the house, you know, there are certain parts that are pretty dark. Like when he's bleeding out on the floor, it looks like chocolate syrup because there's no light kit in that fucking room when they're getting that shot. If you're a gore hound going to watch this movie, yeah, you get quantity, but I really don't think the quality is here if that's your sole piece that you're looking at.
Melody hides in a closet as Leatherface seems to be grieving the loss of Jenny and looking in a mirror. We see a party bus getting loaded as Leatherface starts destroying his room looking for his chainsaw. More on that bus later, boys. The mechanic finds Dante walking around with his face completely smashed, as Matt pointed out. We've heard Matt's point of view on this. Mick, what'd you think about when we see Dante just kind of walking around like this?
I'd heard a few reviewers say nice things about the scene where Dante gets attacked in the kitchen.
Okay.
And how it's presented via the kitchen door flapping back and forth. So we're seeing snatches of the attack, yes? And it's a direct lift from Hitchcock's Rope.
Uh-huh.
Which is fine and everything, you know, steal from the best. But the actual wound isn't convincing. The makeup just seems... Even ignoring the fact that, yeah, he probably hit the carotid artery or something there, and he should have been dead in seconds, just the wound doesn't look terribly convincing. I'm not sure what it is. Is it because they shot this all digitally?
I think so. I think Matt hit it on the head that I think about 80% of this stuff is all digital, and I think
not even the effecting digitally, but you know the way they, like the TV show The Walking Dead, they still shoot that on film?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Because lots of prosthetic appliances and things like that just don't read correctly if you shoot them on like a digital format.
I get what you're saying, yeah.
And film's more forgiving of this, and I think with this, is that an issue? Did the stuff, is that as good as it was going to look if you're shooting this on I think they shot this on the Arri Alexa, which is a great camera, but, you know, certainly the makeup wasn't that impressive. You know, it was kind of like, okay.
The mechanic finds Leatherface, who promptly kills him by smashing his face to bits.
Somebody must love the movie Irreversible, because all I can think of is that scene where the guy's head gets turned into hamburger meat with the fire extinguisher.
Yes. Yeah, but the mechanic guy gets to use his handgun, because this film also thinks that open carry laws are sane.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the only way to stop a bad guy with a chainsaw is if there's a good guy with a gun.
Leatherface then spots Melody in the corner in the process. Meanwhile, Sally sees the abandoned van as Melody gets caught by Leatherface. He starts up his chainsaw as she flees. She grabs the keys for both the car and the bus. I did like the chainsaw appearing through the floorboards and coming at her. I thought that was kind of frightening and kind of suspenseful set of images.
They missed the mark by about a decade, though, because that's the gimmicky shit that should have been in 3D.
Yes.
True. You're not wrong. But I'm just saying, as this movie, and I'm like you guys, I watched this twice for this fucking review. I'm not watching it in the most positive light, but I thought this little bit was kind of effective.
Yeah, but it's preceded by the bit where Leatherface breaks down a wall in the house to get at his chainsaw where he's hidden it.
Absolutely.
It's like Leatherface is, you know, like an ex-CIA operative covering his... Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
We made the Liam Neeson reference already, but it's like, yeah, he's thinking, I knew this day would come. I think the makers have made a big deal about the fact that they... it's the same model of chainsaw from the original, and they sourced the original prop, and then one or two shots, it is the original chainsaw from the original film. It's just so goofy.
Yeah.
Does he have fake passports in there as well? and foreign currency? And, you know, it's ridiculous. Again, he's Leatherface. He's not that bright.
Melody gets away as the bus is onboarded by Leatherface, and here we go. Leatherface is not getting canceled, ladies and gentlemen. I give you the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in every sense of the word. This almost had a Freddy at the Barbecue in Part 2 kind of vibe for me. Though, I did like how they finally took the title in a literal sense. You know, there's some brutal stuff being done here. Arms, heads, stomachs being mangled. And we have a complete slaughter in a blue hue that would make James Cameron proud. I thought this was okay. What'd you guys think slaughter here?
Here's the thing. The first person who gets a line when they all pull out their phones because they think it's a joke or something, or a yokel, yes. And one of the kids on the bus says, you're getting canceled or whatever the terrible line is, yes. And that character is Asian American. And maybe the most memorable kid on the bus is, we've not mentioned her, but Catherine, the lady from the bank who somehow approved all of his loans, yes.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Who seems to be a 25-year-old Afro-American woman, because, again, this is how gentrification works, yes. It's the banks that are all controlled by young people of color, driving white people out. This is how gentrification works in this movie's crazy universe.
Yeah.
She gets the most grotesque kill, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to think about, were you just thinking this is a cool kill, or were you at any point just not pausing and thinking, wait a second, we've given the movie single coolest kill. Yeah, because, you know, the way she gets bisected, it's a really cool kill, yes. But we're meeting this punishment out to the only black woman in our movie.
Let me say I'm glad they used the color blue, because that's one I can actually see and recognize the craftsmanship that's utilized. As far as the content, my problem is just the everything looks so artificial and computerized. Not to keep comparing it, but as much as I didn't like Halloween Kills, I thought the way people are offed in that movie, a lot of them did kind of, you know, unsettle me. And the way the blood splatters were done in that, I thought were far more effective than this. Everything just looked. And it becomes comical with just how much there is.
Yes.
And to start off with a joke and you have the Instagram comments of being like, oh, that looks fake. Why are you trying to make this funny? Because up to this point, it's played pretty damn straight as far as Leatherface just being a menace. This might as well be in Jason Takes Manhattan when he fights the boxer. That's kind of what this is.
Yeah. Also, it's a it's one of the things where I'm looking forward to revisiting this movie in like 10 years time.
You are?
When it's depicted. Yeah, but yeah, because its depiction of youth culture will be hilariously dated by then. Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
It's already full of things that are in the movie because they clearly didn't speak to any 23-year-olds about any of this stuff. Yeah, but you know, we give it a few years, and this will be hilariously dated.
And Mick, I think we've reviewed movies like this before, and I think we talked about this when we did the Romero series, where you have people not of that generation trying to write for a younger generation, and
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It always comes off pretty bad. Unless you have somebody who's pretty sly with a pen, it never, ever goes well.
No. The whole bus scene, right? This is coming after years of us having similar scenes of carnage in enclosed spaces on public transport. Like, I'm thinking Train to Busan. And also, I don't know if you saw The Raid 2.
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I watched The Raid and didn't bother.
Yeah, there's a very memorable scene in Raid 2 where a character called Hammer Girl, who's awesome, has a fight in kind of an enclosed subway car with a, I want to say Yakuza. And, yes, pummels them all. We've had kind of had a lot of sequences in films lately where this kind of idea of, you know, a close quarters carnage in like a sealed tube with lots of participants has been done much better.
Leatherface finds Melody and is coming after her before she's being rescued by Lila and then Sally.
Well, here's the thing, right? We have the setup with the corkscrew thing
that
Mel buys. Yes. So I'm thinking, well, this is going to get rammed somewhere. Yeah, this is going to be, there's going to be a gory effect. And she just kind of pokes Leatherface with it.
Yeah.
And then they climb up through the skylight that's above the toilet in the bus. There's a skylight above the toilet. Would there be a skylight above? I don't know. I you know, maybe.
You don't hang out in party
buses?
They
climb up through that. And then the next shot is they're on the street. This bus is huge, yes?
So amateurish.
It's like a 30-foot drop from the bus, yes?
Yeah.
They did decide to cut that bit because this film was already a week behind schedule and over budget before it started shooting again, yes?
Yeah.
You know, they threw out all of the original director's footage, apparently, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So were they exciting stuff? Were they like, okay, well, they're just going to be on the ground? This is what I want to know.
And when you're thinking about stuff like this, you're obviously not enjoying the film.
Well, no, but I mean, it's kind of like they're climbing onto the roof, and I'm thinking, oh, this will be exciting. They're going to be on the roof, and maybe Leatherface will be below. It'll be an exciting set piece, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be a scary thing. How would you get down? But, oh, no, they're down already.
The thing I could not believe was, so these are the only two characters who have seen Leatherface firsthand, and they spend this entire sequence cowering in the back like Shaggy and Scooby-Doo.
Well, not only that, it's, you know when Leatherface is about starting his rampage, yes?
Right.
And we have Mel has a flashback to seeing Leatherface's picture on the notice board in the gas station. And it's like, well, duh. Why do we need this? To you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Would she not already have figured this out? We've figured this out. Why is that there? Yeah, anyway.
Sally says she's been waiting 50 years for this night, and the two girls need to stay until she gets him, and then she just takes off, leaving them locked up in the car.
I was thinking fucking, you know, Jurassic Park when he leaves the kids in the car?
Yeah.
That's all I could fucking think of. I wanted the girl to be like, he left us. And by the way, she'll change this. Within the span of 3 minutes, she goes from stay here to get the fuck out of here. Here's the keys.
Yes.
She confronts Leatherface as little to no music is going on, and she rattles off the names of her friends. He looks at her and leaves, and then goes after the girls in the van before Sally shows back up.
She asks her to say their names, and I'm like,
he's a mute.
Yeah.
Sally, it's Leatherface. You know, he doesn't do a lot of after-dinner speaking, right? But, you know, it's Leatherface. His entire vocabulary is pig squealing noises. You know, you're expecting him to enunciate. Oh, just really?
Oh,
really?
Oh, my God.
And this was
shoot him.
Yeah, this was the worst example of just shoot him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the Bond villain vibe, right? Where, you know, you're just like, why don't you just kill him at this point?
She doesn't know how to counter bullets. And clearly, as a ranger, she did not take the marksman training.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, and just to get back to this, right? You know the way she has this Polaroid photo in her car, in her, like, vehicle, yes? In her Jeep, yes?
Uh-huh,
right.
Yeah.
The Polaroid photo, that's clearly a frame from the original movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen people say, like, oh, no, you see, that makes sense. That must be the Polaroid that the hitchhiker took of them in the original film.
Yeah.
But it's not, because the hitchhiker sets the Polaroid and he takes them on fire.
Oh, yeah.
When they're kicking him out, it doesn't survive, and it makes no sense. But also, that Polaroid is in the documentary.
Yes, it is.
Oh, you're right.
It's in the documentary, which makes no sense, because the documentary also has Sally closing her door on the filmmakers and not cooperating. So why is it, again, it's, you know, yeah. They didn't think any of this shit.
What's the extent of her non-disclosure agreement?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, they didn't think any of this stuff through, and that wouldn't matter if the film was entertaining enough, but it's terrible, and I'm not just pondering all of the shit that doesn't make any sense.
My favorite reviews that we do, Matt, are the ones when we poke so many holes in a fucking plot that there's no material left. That's exactly what we're doing here. No,
this is like a butcher shop. This is like a cow at a butcher shop. There's going to be no meat left on these.
No, and it's inexcusable, honestly, if I could just be serious just for a second. Why, if you're going to attack a franchise like this, why would you go this amateurish? I mean, the script to the first film, we even poked holes in that as well. It's not perfect. But there were things in it that were uncompromising, and you actually get past a lot of the gore because you kind of feel for Sally just being tortured in that room. I don't feel for any of these characters, and I feel like the worst of those Friday the 13th sequels where you just don't give a shit about anybody. And this is even worse because even those Friday the 13th fucking sequels were better written than this. This is so poorly written. Why did this go through so many hands? Why did Netflix pick this up and say, you need to do shit with this and make this better? There's no sense of any sort of quality control over this.
No. Also, I'd like to point out at this stage in the movie, the lights of the abandoned cinema on the street are on.
Yes.
The neon sign is on.
And I was expecting John Goodman from Matinee to pop out and be like, all right, guys, come on in for the feature attraction.
Yeah, I'm just like, why are those lights on other than so there can be some neon in some shot? Yes, so the backgrounds are less drab.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But I mean, yeah, it makes no sense. It's like, what? Who turned them on? Why is it still working? Yeah, and streetlights are on as well, which is weird for a ghost town.
Leatherface goes after the girls in the van before Sally shows back up, saying she's the one who got away, and then tells the girls to get the fuck out of there.
Speaking of 180s, the hardest I laughed in this movie, and when I say laughed, I mean almost woke up my child, was not only do these people love Leatherface, they love Thor. Because he throws
like
Mjolnir, and I had expected it to come back to his fucking hand.
Oh, but wait. When he throws the hammer earlier at Melody, and it punches her through the floorboard, yeah, it's like, really?
So you're saying that was set up?
Wonderful. I'm saying it's like, are Newton's laws different in this universe? That's my question.
I thought he was going to have like a magnetized glove so the chainsaw comes back to him because it's, you know, 2022. Just,
oh, yeah. It's
like, I was thinking of Thor and I was thinking of Captain America throwing the shield when he threw that chainsaw. Like, I haven't made sounds like that in a very long time where I almost fell off my couch. I couldn't believe what I was watching because that's in Mortal Kombat. If you press down back square, he will throw the chainsaw at his opponent.
Right, yeah.
Melody almost apologizes to Leatherface for what happened to his mom before Lila shows that she can't unlock a safety and then gets brutally attacked and survives.
By this stage, right, the fight is now inside the interior of the town's abandoned cinema.
Yeah? Yes.
Which, I have questions. So there's a big, ginormous hole in the floor that's full of water.
Yes. Yeah? Yes.
It's like a big, like sort of swimming pool deep. Yes.
Yeah, it's like Dario Argento's Inferno, where there's that giant, endless cavern of water.
But like in Inferno, that's cool because Inferno is weird and supernatural, and it doesn't make sense, and that's the point. And here it's like, why? Why is that there? Why would it be there? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and with but all the mold and disinfectant, that water would give her bone cancer in about 5 years.
Yeah, that's just a, yeah.
So Sally, after, by the way, Leatherface, I mean, he takes a chainsaw to her stomach, and we see it from a long shot. Again, this director in the goddamn long shots.
Yep. And you hear the DP yell, finish her.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So we see that shot, but after Lila survives this attack, Sally is talking to her, saying he will never stop haunting you. And then she dies.
It's kind of like, you know, it's when somebody gets a ridiculous injury but are still speaking? And all I can think of is, have you seen Walk Hard?
Yes.
It's kind of like, the, I'm cut in half pretty bad, Dewey. You know, you can have to do enough living for both of us. You know, it's that, yeah. Right? It's that ridiculous. But, you know.
Fucking, you but think Lockhart, I always, oh God, I always think of Tropic Thunder, where they're shooting his fake death scenes, and his intestines are like peeling out of his body, and he's still talking.
Yeah.
It's like that, and she, what are you saying to just kill her off so unceremoniously?
Mm.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when they killed John Connor in the opening of Terminator 6.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but they've got obvious production reasons for doing that, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Edward Furlong, and not to make light of it, but Edward Furlong, you know, has had a rough couple of decades.
Yes.
And is perhaps not in a position to properly reprise that role. But here
he's
it's...
He's also not 13 years old anymore.
Also, he's not 13 years old, yeah. But with this one, it's kind of like a... I think the thing I'd have to ask Fede Alvarez is, Fede, why are you such a nihilist? You know, it's a, why kill her, why bring her back, then kill her off?
Good point.
He also, not that Alvarez directed this, but I've noticed a trend in all of his movies where I really enjoy the first two acts, and then they fall apart. Evil Dead Remake, it hits a point where the gore is just white noise, and the addict subplot means nothing, like the entire impetus of the story. And Don't Breathe is really effective until you get to the gross ramifications of revenge and possible artificial insemination. Here, it's... He can't end a movie to save his life. I mean, this one, they also didn't know how to start a movie outside yeah. of turning on the camera and saying action.
Well,
but this whole climactic fight in the movie theater is one of the dumbest things I have seen in a very long time.
Well, here's the thing. Did you spot the, there's like a standee for a fake movie?
I watched this twice and I didn't catch that. What was it?
Okay, when Leatherface is tricking Lila, yes.
Uh-huh.
And he leaves the chainsaw running, but he's not near it, so she runs in that direction, yes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the chainsaw's on the floor next to a standee for a fake film called Werewolves of the Alamo 2. And
I'd rather watch
I've got to
that
say,
movie.
That sounds like a less stupid film than this.
is that showing in a separate room that I can go and watch that?
Yeah, can I just watch that movie? Because it's got to be better than this.
What does it say about your main character's education that she gets outsmarted by Leatherface?
I know.
Repeatedly. It's not a one-off thing.
Yeah, it's not one of the great chess players.
No. Lila pursues Leatherface with Sally's shotgun, but Leatherface makes that scarce before again attacking Lila. But here's Melody to save her, in slow motion nonetheless.
I half expected them to pull a Matrix.
Unbelievable.
She freezes at bullet time.
It made me think that, you know, this movie's already only about 73, 75 minutes. Were they really literally trying to elongate the time by elongating this climax? Lila
yeah, it's like 300. It's a 45-minute movie extended to almost 2 hours because there's
exactly.
so much slow motion.
Lila shoots him a couple times before knocking him into water with his own chainsaw. This is poetic, just, wait, no, what the fuck is this? That's literally how she gets him down, like, she doesn't even, like, turn it on or anything, she just knocks him into the water?
Yeah. Ugh. It's a, well, it's, there has to be a big thing of water for him to fall into, right?
Yes.
That's the only reason it's there. There's no reason for it other than to be a thing Leatherface will fall into.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And it's just such terrible plotting. And it's like, if somebody was thinking of an imaginative way of doing this set piece in an abandoned movie theater, right? They could have been, oh, does something happen with the curtains? Or is the projector still there? Is there some piece of equipment or apparatus that could be used? But no, it's like, there's a big hole in the floor and it's full of water. Like, enough.
Most likely can't swim.
Yes, enough to submerge leather. I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
It's like fucking Jason. Jason Lives when they tie him to a cinder block
yeah.
and drowned at the end.
They spot Sally's picture before getting into the car and driving away, or they think they have.
Well, just break up. They get into a Tesla that's not branded.
Yeah.
But they've taken the logos off because they didn't get the permission from Tesla to use a Tesla.
No shit.
Logo and... Yeah, and obviously they have to put in the autopilot settings, right?
Uh-huh.
Because Bulgaria yeah. back to Austin is a long drive.
Yeah, the car, Q equipped it. It's like a Lotus from Spy Who Loved Me where it can go underwater.
Unbelievable.
This is... Yeah, but... Yeah, no. Continue.
They think they've driven away, but we can't have one of these horror films without a final stinger. Melody is grabbed and has her head completely cut off before Leatherface does a version of his chainsaw dance. This is the only reason for the scene to exist, right, boys? We need to see that fucking dance at the end of every single one of these movies.
There's a second one that's more insidious, no pun intended, which is a franchise we might review someday.
Maybe.
It is a shameless way to do the Friday the 13th last scare with Jason.
Yeah.
And it's a car, which is how Nightmare on Elm Street 1 ends.
Yes.
Oh, yes. It's also a complete callback to the end of the original Texas Chainsaw because we have our final survivor being driven away, yes.
And a car that drives itself.
And a car that drives itself.
I would have rather had Kit come in and save her ass.
And watching Leatherface do his dance of a... well, it's not Rage this time, though, right? Just kind of his...
Yeah, it's not Rage.
Fuck you, I won dance.
Yeah.
His I need my Ritalin. He's like, I'm having withdrawals. Help me.
His I finally cut a head with a chainsaw off dance. Well,
are we going to talk about the post-credit scene?
Is there a post? I didn't know there was a post-credit scene. Is there?
Oh,
God. The credits run 9 minutes.
As soon as this fucker hit credits, guys, I got to say, I turned it the fuck off. Like, I didn't even know there was a post-credit scene.
Okay. I stepped through because I wanted to see how many people worked on this thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It ends with him going back to the original Sawyer house.
Yeah.
Because they had to cram that shit in here.
It's a kind of very chintzy looking digital matte shot as well.
Yep. Makes it worse. Looks like a green screen.
It looks like it's been comped in and it's kind of, yes, it looks fakey and it's a, and also the house is still too intact.
Yeah. For a building that has probably had no maintenance whatsoever.
Since the Nixon administration, yeah.
So we're not seeing him cut anything up. We're just seeing him in a solar house. That's the way it ends.
No. He goes back to that farmhouse from the original. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We see him walking along the road, yes, and the camera tilts up and then pulls back a bit, and we see that he's at the end of the driveway of the farmhouse from the original, or rather a digital matte shot of it, walking towards it.
Yeah, the matte placement is so bad, even George Lucas would be like, that looks fake as shit.
Yeah, it's kind of and there's still like abandoned vehicles in front of it.
Yeah. Better from, and like, 2005?
Well, it's kind of like
the Gordon is sitting there.
And the outdoor swing is still intact. So I want to know what kind of wood treatment agents they were using. Well, the other thing is the end credits, yes. All of the principal credits, they repeat them twice.
Do they?
Yeah, they kind of go like, a film by David Blue Garcia in big writing, yes. Held for about 5 seconds. Then they do it again in smaller writing. For another 3 seconds, the credits are super padded. And they have one of the music cues of the credits, the thing that plays out over the end credits,
uh-huh.
It's credited as Leatherface theme. It's a sort of synthwave piece of music. And this is one of the things that's like, right, if they were clearly trying to turn Leatherface into a slasher icon, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That they can treat the same way that, you know, Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees have been treated. Then, yeah, you need one of the things that he's long been absent, which is a recognizable musical motif. So giving Leatherface a theme is actually a good idea if you're doing that, but if you just bury it at the end of the movie and don't use it throughout, what is the point?
What's the point is a great way to summarize this movie.
Perfect. Let's do our final summarization. A scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2022? Mick, you go ahead and go, sir.
Oh, it's getting a 1.
Wow.
There's nothing good here. I can forgive none of it. It would be getting more than that if its politics just weren't so offensive. If it didn't think that school shooting survivors just really need to just learn that guns are awesome. If it wasn't that, I might be giving it like a 4 or something like that. But no, it's getting a 1 just for mishandling that theme so badly and so irresponsibly. And for hating young people so much.
This is your audience, folks. This is your audience that you tried catering to. And man, if we go in by anything that Mick is saying, you have obviously failed. Matt, how about you, sir?
Speaking of catering, the characters are also supposed to be relatively close to my age, maybe slightly younger, so I'm also the prime audience.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, to disappoint the viewers, this is not as bad as Leatherface, in my opinion. It's also irredeemable shit, for whatever that's worth. So the reason why I'm not going to come down as hard as I did on Leatherface is two reasons. One, this movie's mercifully short.
Yeah.
And two, the lack of quality names, both in terms of the people behind it and the people in front of the camera. Leatherface was from the directors of Inside, which is a way more technically accomplished movie than anything that these people have been in, so I hold that to a higher standard. But because of the runtime and how bad this movie is, this is the equivalent of the phrase 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. And on that note, I can't give it a 10, and I'm damn sure not going to give it a 5. I'm going just slightly higher than Nick. I'm going a 2, just because the expectations were in the pit, basically, if you ask me. And it's so short that if it wasn't for the politics, it would be inoffensive. But the movie still manages to be so offensive with how it depicts some of its political slants.
Well, I want to be a little lighter than you two. I want to be a little less harsh. I did find small things to enjoy in this. I like the scene with the chainsaw coming down out of the floorboards. I like a little bit of the beginning. And, you know, some of the gore I thought was better than what you guys are saying. Other than that, though, and when you factor in the politics, it makes my score go down way far because it's inexcusable, the approach these people took. But I'm just giving it a typical 4 out of 10 for me. I thought there was enough for Gorehounds to really dig into. But honestly, if you're looking for something more than that, if you're looking for something that they had the opportunity to do, and I feel like we've had the same conversation about this, where they have the opportunity to do something grand, and they make it worse and worse. And this is by far worse than Leatherface in my eyes. But this was a pretty tough watch. 4 out of 10 from me. Mick, where do they go from here, sir? I mean, the director has said that he has expressed an interest in doing a sequel if demand is high enough. And you know what? This thing is getting a lot of views on Netflix. It's one of its highest rated movies as of this recording.
Yes.
Do you think they could do something that you would like?
Well, at this point, the concept is so completely broken that the only way is up. I mean, I don't think they should make any more of these, but at this point, expectations are so low, and it's not so this as a concept is not so distant from, you know, the original movie, which I think is closer to folk horror than proto slasher. You know, I think the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre is much more akin to like Midsommar or The Wicker Man than to something like Friday the 13th Part 2. But if they've decided that, okay, we want to make more of these and it's a slasher, it's a pure slasher thing now, well, the only way is up. You could make a film like this that's not terrible. You could have something with a you could have a more interesting range of victims. You could have a wittier script. You could have some black comedy in it, a thing that's not really present here. And you could still kind of do those things and then still stay within the sort of expected, you know, slasher confines that clearly they wanted for this. You could make a sequel that's better than this. I don't think anyone's ever going to make a sequel to this that's as good as either of Hooper's films, and I think they should stop. But yeah, again, like you say, apparently this has had 29 million views, yeah, or something insane.
That's insane.
Like more numbers than probably Midnight Mass got, which is maybe the most interesting kind of horror thing I've seen this year, and is incredible, and everyone should watch that on Netflix. But if they do go there, then they need to go all in. They need to just go, okay, this is a stupid slasher concept now. I guess the question is, if Legendary retain the rights to this, then what they really need to do is, and the thing that we should contend the most for is, they own the rights to Leatherface, yes, but they also own the remake rights to Godzilla and all the Toho monsters at the minute. And frankly, the fact that they haven't met is just an outrage. I want Leatherface versus Kong. I mean, if we're gonna go full stupid, let's just embrace it. I want full stupid.
Well, you got
not
it with this one.
Well, I didn't really. I got something that's stupid because you're trying to make something that had aspirations they're incapable of delivering.
Matt, what about you, sir? Is there anything they could do with this that would make you feel as good as you did when you saw 2003's remake?
Oh, boy. I think the short answer is no, because the one thing that I always said was give it to directors that have a good track record, and the Inside people failed miserably on that. So I guess outside of giving it to like a Mike Flanagan or a James Wan or people who seem to know what they're doing and could do something fascinating with this concept, the only thing that I think would intrigue me outside of doing something dumb like making him supernatural, because that's the ultimate fuck it sign if you ask me, is do like Don't Breathe, where they're trapped in the Sawyer house and it's like this giant maze of disemboweled bodies, and there's like, fuck, have him team up with Jigsaw to deck out that house at this point. Because I honestly, to me, this is by far the worst of these big franchises. Like, the lows in this are worse than the lows in Halloween or Nightmare or Friday or any of the other big horror franchises. This is just the ultimate example of letting the tires run so much traction all off the car, go down the road, take out a school, take out a nursery until there's nothing left and the entire franchise is burned to cinder. That's where I'm at. They've made four movies in a row that I just fucking hated. The only reason I will review the next one is because it is in my contract that I have to.
Yeah, I'm just going to just ask, because you said you mentioned driving there, yes. If this place, if Harlow is so far away from Austin, where are they charging their Tesla? This is my last question I had written down, and it didn't make any sense to me. It's like, how's the Tesla getting charged?
Oh, my God. You know, it is uncanny to me that they haven't been able to make anything even remotely watchable since that second film. I gave Leatherface a decent mark only because it was something that, to me, was enlightening amongst a whole just slew of sewage that we had sludged through in order to get to where we were. But honestly, and I'm going to go ahead and say this, the fact that no filmmaker has been able to make anything worthy of this franchise, it's been staring them in the face. They've been looking for a filmmaker whose aesthetics fit this. And Rob Zombie's, instead of doing the Munsters, he should be doing a remake of this.
He did. Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses are borderline unofficial adaptations.
But do official adaptation. Why are they just beating around the bush here? The guy hasn't made, spoiler alert, we're going to be covering Rob Zombie's movies in the course of this year with the gentleman we have on for this set of podcasts. But why would they not go to him for this franchise? Because he made those Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses, that's why?
No,
maybe he just doesn't want to do it.
I think Rob Zombie would actually, you know, as much as he's influenced by them, if you actually handed them the keys to this franchise, he'd probably want to do something nuts with it that isn't what they'd like. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at this, right, here's the thing. This is now, what, the fifth Texas Chainsaw film that doesn't mention cannibalism, because the whole subtext of the original film is it's anti-meat, right? But mm-hmm. you don't want that in your convenient slasher sequel because you don't want to make your audience feel uncomfortable. And there's nothing about dysfunctional family dynamics in this film either. And that's a thing they've been kind of winning out of this as well, right? And I bet you Rob Zombie would want to be all in on both of those things.
Yeah, you're right. That's the direction I would take it. Other than that, there's nothing they could do here that would intrigue me. The only reason I watched it for this podcast was because, again, I'm a completionist, or Matt, as Matt calls me, a masochist. And I just feel like I have to torture myself for my listeners. But honestly, there needs to be some, if they do something with this, they need to do something different, because what they've done for the last 30, 40 years hasn't been working. Or fuck it, don't even bother. Just leave it the way it is. Because the more you do movies like this, the more you're going to taint the legacy of that first film. And I still stand by that first film as being just unrelenting terror to its best degree. All right, that does it for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2022. I'd like to thank Mick. Mick, you haven't been on since, but we have started a new venture. We will bring you back for Rob Zombie. I definitely want to do that series with you. So thank you for coming and gracing us with your presence. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been good to discuss this film with other humans. It's been like therapy.
Yeah, I
feel like when we bring you on for these reviews, it's like a funeral where it's, I love seeing you, but I wish it was under better.
And Matt, thank you, sir. You know, we're rolling these out pretty slow, but we have big plans. And this site, I'm very excited. We are once again reinvigorated about the direction we could take this. As we mentioned in our first show, we have different directions we're going to take this. We're not just going to do movies. We're going to do other things. And I couldn't ask for a better partner, Matt. So thank you very much for joining me, even if it was to get tortured for this film. So until next time, sorry if a big podcast makes you uncomfortable. Thank you, gentlemen.
But the saw is family.
Family?
Well, granddad hears about this.
Good people in those bags?
Gee, looks like we've died and gone to hell.
Are we having a party or what?
Now, I had to eat. Rations were scarce. So, well, about once a week, some poor soul was chosen.
Over, you hear me?
Jed, what did I tell you about outsiders? They fill your ears with lies. You show who you are, Jed. Look what that man did to your face, huh?
Jason, don't do it!
Not.
Oh, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It's so weird. Recording during the day, I'm drinking coffee instead of beer.
Instead of alcohol?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 5:30, so I bought, what is this called? It's a new Mountain Dew. It's called Spark, so it's like raspberry flavored.
How many new Mountain Dews do they need?
I know, it's insane. Like, you could fill a rainbow with the entire aisle.
Just a heads up.
Yes, sir.
You know I knew the directors and the DP who were fired from this, right?
You're going to go into this now instead of waiting until we hit record?
No.
Okay, all right.
Well, yeah, we'll get into this. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, save it. Save it, because honestly,
okay,
I don't know too much about the backstory of this, but...
Neither do I.
Cool.
All right, let's... let me pull up... There's no budget or anything on this because there's no goddamn screenings.
And there was no money to make this movie.
Yeah, no shit. All right, here we go. And then we got into, what was the name of the second one?
The Beginning.
Texas. Okay, then we get into Texas Chainsaw the Beginning.
But over the last year, they produced Dune, Godzilla vs. Kong, and Garrett, speaking of movies we've reviewed, they've produced a lot of Nolan's films, and M. Night Shyamalan's Lady in the Water.
Oh, jeez. Oh, boy. That movie just will not leave our fucking airwaves, will it? We have to mention it at least one time.
I have to compare it because Leatherface, I said for the longest time, was the worst movie we've reviewed I feel I have watched for the show until Lady in the Water came around. And that is precisely why I waited until the last possible minute to sit down and watch this movie.
Yeah.
Have you read the book about the making of Lady in the Water?
Yeah, we discussed it.
Yeah,
Mike
has been trying to get... I want him to send me a copy of it, and I'll actually read it.
I read it at work. I bought an online copy of it, and I read it, like, it was so slow at the casino I was working at the time that I spent my nights reading it, and I couldn't fucking put it down. It
yeah,
is
the man
so
who heard voices. It's called and it's
it's crazy.
It's highly recommended.
Yeah,
the film that book is
We go into it on that show, Meg. It's one of our notoriously best shows. I recommend you check that show out.
I will listen to that one, yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I almost had an aneurysm talking about that movie.
He really did. All right. We then meet the old lady of the house, played by Alice Creech, who says that she has a title to keep her land. Creech is someone who I know from one movie and one movie only, and that we will be covering it in a few years. It's called Sleepwalkers.
Oh, man, she's the Borg Queen.
Are we thinking the same one? Star Trek?
Yeah, oh, yeah. She's Star Trek as well. You're a Star Trek guy, and I'm not, so that's why you knew that. You want to cover that so bad. I know you do.
Oh, you're goddamn right.
Go ahead, Mick.
Here's a weird thing.
Arlie Ermey's, I think, the exception for the Platinum Dunes one, but that's a prequel, so it's kind of different.
Well, if you count Dead Franklin in Chainsaw 2.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, Dead Franklin, you know. Boy, yeah.
Meanwhile, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, just sighing generally, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody must love the movie Irreversible, because all I can think of is that scene where the guy's head gets turned into hamburger meat with the fire extinguisher.
Yes.
I've never seen that one.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the best movies you will only watch one time.
Okay. Yes,
It's on the corner of my, like, a Blu-ray collection, the films I will never watch again but need to own because they're important.
Gotcha. They think they've driven away, but we can't have one of these horror films without a final stinger. Melody. They've been looking for a filmmaker whose aesthetics fit this. And Rob Zombie's been trying to do the goddamn Addams Family. Instead of doing the Addams Family, he needs to do a fucking Texas Chainsaw remake. Instead of doing the Munsters, he should be doing a remake of this. That's where he should be doing.